Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome to a mini-episode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, brought to you by FilmDivider.com. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and I'll be bringing you a truncated version of the show to bridge the gap between our Iron Man 2 and Christmas-slash-end-of-the-year special episodes. On today's show, I'll give you my reactions to the comics that Seb and James recommended on last week's podcast. Those were Iron Man, The Secret Origin of Tony Stark, and Secret Avengers issues 1 to 5. But before any of that, let's take a look at some of the comic book movie news that has broken over the past week. And first off, we're starting with Deadpool, one of the 17 new comic book movies due to be released next year. And while a new trailer for the film is expected to drop on Christmas Day, so I'd look forward to that particular present, we've also recently had a brief IMAX trailer that was released, a new poster, and also the announcement that Colossus has been recast in the film, with Andre Trichetto being replaced by 24 actor Stefan Kapicic. Deadpool hits cinemas in February 2016, so actually it won't be all that many episodes before we're discussing it in depth on the podcast. Kurt Russell has confirmed that he is in talks to join Guardians of the Galaxy 2, with the role that he's up for believed to be that of Peter Quill's father. Russell was appearing on the podcast Happy, Sad, Confused, and said that while he had been contacted by James Gunn and Marvel, he hadn't actually seen the first film, although he'd heard good things, and that he'd need to do so as well as reading the script for the sequel before he could even begin to think about joining the film. As a big, big Trouble in Little China fan, though, Russell, for me, seems like real home run casting for Quill's old man. And so, as a result, I can really only hope that he likes the script, because I would be totally on board for that. The animated Spider-Man film, written and produced by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, is still set to be released in 2018, but its release date has been moved back a few months from July 20th, 2018, to December of the same year. Now, that still means that we'll have a Spidey in some form popping up on the big screen every year for at least the next 3 years. Civil War, solo Spider-Man film, animated Spider-Man film. But it does mean that we're going to get that one a little later than expected. As for that film, we don't really know a whole lot about it. But I've got my fingers crossed that it's going to be a film that's going to be maybe trading on the popularity of the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoons, which kids seem to absolutely love, and maybe features another Ultimate Spider-Man, the Ultimate Spider-Man from the comics, Miles Morales. Whether he's the main Spider-Man or not, it seems like the perfect way to introduce that character to younger audiences. And finally, according to Variety reporter Justin Kroll, the cast of Wonder Woman may be set for a shake-up. So, Nicole Kidman was in talks for the movie, but scheduling conflicts meant she couldn't join the cast and so wasn't part of the cast announcement that accompanied that film going in front of cameras. Now, apparently the role she was set to play remains uncast, and Kroll tweeted that Patty Jenkins is currently trying to decide whether to just shuffle the cast around and move the already announced cast member Robin Wright into that role, which is believed to be Hippolyta, or whether to cast a new actress entirely. Either way, there will be one more actress required to join that film, so expect to hear a Wonder Woman casting announcement at some point soon. Okay, well, that is it for this week's comic book movie news. Let's move on to discussing this week's comic book recommendations. And we'll start off with Seb's recommendation, which was Iron Man, The Secret Origin of Tony Stark. This was issues 9 through 17 of the last volume of Iron Man before the all-new, all-different Marvel relaunch. This comes from Kieran Gillen and Carlo Pagulian. And I read all of this on Marvel Unlimited, so if you want to go out there and read this, then you can do that that way. Now, so this is a 9-issue arc, which, given that it starts with issue 9, I think obviously this is something that Kieran Gillen's arc on Iron Man had been building to. And I thought that maybe I did maybe lack a little bit of context, but at the same time, the main character is Tony Stark, Iron Man, so I kind of know who that character is anyway. And my kind of passing knowledge of what was going on with the character in the comics helped. So this is coming off the back of the time that Tony Stark spent in space as a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, in these comics, he isn't a Guardian of the Galaxy. He has been hanging around with them, but at this present moment, he is kind of left to go off on his own adventure. And he's tracking a robot who goes by the name of 451, who was responsible for killing a lot of people on a planet, and Tony wants to bring him to justice. Except Tony has massively underestimated this robot, who is a lot more powerful than he could possibly have imagined, and basically the robot tricks Tony, manages to hack into Tony's suit by controlling his Jarvis equivalent at that time, which is called Pepper, and that Pepper is kind of manipulated by 451 into controlling the entirety of Tony's suit and basically holding him hostage. 451 basically starts telling Tony that there is a whole story about his past that he didn't know about, and he is going to reveal Tony's past to him, and as a result reveal why that's important, because there is something that 451 is going to want Tony to do. So the comic kind of, over the course of the first, I would say at least 4 or 5 issues, is kind of flashing between telling a story of a Howard Stark, who is, at the time, his wife is pregnant, and the baby is ill, and there is no human tech that can save him. So Howard gets the help of this 451, who says basically he can implant this stuff in the baby, and tells Tony that he basically made Tony to be the man he is today, and that he made him to be this very clever, technology-driving guy who basically was going to be able to grow up to fulfill his role as a protector of Earth, and that he was going to do that not as Iron Man, but in a different suit of armour that 451 has got his hands on, which is this 5-mile-tall god killer thing, which apparently will be able to protect Earth from any threats from around the universe. The only problem is, for Tony to control it, he will give up being the person he is. And this is something that 451 had planned all the way since his first involvement with Howard Stark. And we kind of see the stuff in the past with Howard Stark kind of plays out. There are aliens in Las Vegas, and he has to, first of all, save 451 from these aliens, and then he has to go and take out these aliens, and it's lots of kind of Vegas-y, heisty kind of stuff that's playing out in the background, while this real hard sci-fi story is going on in the present day, out in outer space, with Tony Stark and 451. And I'll be honest, reading it, I kind of struggle with real hard sci-fi a lot of the time. I was slightly concerned reading this for the first 4 or 5 issues, as well, because this did seem like a big comic that was set up as a retcon of Tony Stark. And if that retcon is taking away his agency and his, him being a self-made man, that felt kind of like not great for the character. But it also made me, I had enough faith in the comic that I thought, well, that can't be what they're doing. So I started second guessing everything that I was reading. And one of my second guesses was spot on. But the other ones maybe, I think, prevented me early on from really enjoying it. And I wonder whether this might be a comic that's more enjoyable on a second read when you know exactly where it's going and you can just enjoy the kind of the plot beats and all that kind of stuff. Now, this is where I'm going to go into real spoiler territory, because the final issue of this comic reveals something about Tony that is... it is a big retcon, but it's not a retcon in the terms of Tony was never responsible for anything he did. What it turns out is the baby that we were talking about the whole time was not Tony Stark. It was actually a brother of Tony Stark. And so this is Arlo Stark, who we meet right at the end. And I'll be honest, I think the reason that I might have been able to second guess this was at the back, in the back of my mind, I might have heard about Tony having a brother. So I kind of went, oh, well, that's, I guess that's not Tony. I'm going to assume that's not Tony, because I just don't believe that this comic would be undermining the character in such a big way. And I was right to have that faith, so, but maybe there was a reason why I guessed it. And so Arlo was actually Maria and Howard's son, who was designed to be the guy who was going to go in the Godkiller outfit. But Howard had realised that 451 was up to something nefarious and tried to counteract some of the stuff that 451 was doing to the fetus. As a result, Arlo was born, but Arlo was also ill. He had, like, breathing problems from a very young age and was basically bedridden. And Howard and Maria realised that 451 at some point was going to come for Arlo, and that they had to protect him from that and hide him. And so... basically, that is why Tony has never met Arlo, because Arlo has been in a hospital wing in hiding for his entire life, watching his younger adopted brother, Tony, become a global celebrity. And so that's the reason how Tony is able to save the day when he's fighting with 451, is that when he is plugged into the Godkiller armor, it doesn't connect with him, because he has never been genetically set up to do this. Arlo should have been the one to do that. And it's actually quite nice as a kind of like thematic tie-up, that actually the fear of the whole comic is that you're taking Tony's agency away from him, when in fact all you're doing is actually doubling down on it. And it's nice because it ends on a kind of a bittersweet note, that Tony still kind of feels that his strings were being pulled to an extent by the fact that his parents never told him he was adopted, and he has to deal with that kind of stuff at the end of the comic. But also it kind of doubles down on Tony's achievements, that yes, he was kind of brought in to be a decoy to distract attention away from Howard and Maria's son, real son, but was still able to achieve everything that he did achieve in his life as Iron Man. I was really interested in those kind of ideas running through the back of the comic, and I think it's one of those that I maybe, once finished reading, appreciated more than when I was in the process. It is 9 issues long, and the pacing is kind of all over the shop because of the way that we've got flashbacks at some point, and then sometimes it's all unfolding on the ship. Because there were some points in this comic that I was going, I'm kind of enjoying this, but where is Tony Stark? And then all the flashback stuff kind of disappears, and you just get this big space battle. And then even after the whole space battle is finished and Tony decides to leave the Guardians and come back to Earth, and we're 3 months in the future at that point, there's still another one big final issue where the big revelation is revealed. It felt sometimes like a story that could have been told faster, but then again, I'm not sure whether it should have been. Like, it maybe needed to feel big and epic and important, and like it was really leading to this big kind of mic drop of a moment at the end. And like I said, I think the moment at the end works, and it justifies a lot of the stuff that comes before. Some of the Godkiller stuff, that's the kind of the big hard sci-fi kind of things that I was talking about having trouble with, because 451 is talking about this Godkiller existing in a war that raged thousands of years ago between the Celestials and some other people on a planet, some usurpers who wanted to take down the Celestials and did manage to kill a lot of them with the Godkiller armor. And We've also got 451 destroying planets, and the ideas are really big. So it is this big hard sci-fi story with this personal drama going on in the middle of it. And it's I thought it worked best when Tony was actually at the center of it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He's such a good character, I think, at this point. He feels on the page. I mean, he looks like Robert Downey Jr. and he talks like him. I do wonder how much of an impact the movie portrayal has had on that character on the page. It feels the same in the current Iron Man run that I'm reading, the most recent Iron Man comics. I think that's probably one of the areas where maybe between the comics and the movies things have really helped, in that you can just dip into an Iron Man comic and feel like you're reading the character that you know from the screen, which is very helpful indeed. But yes, yeah, so Iron Man 1917, Secret Origin of Tony Stark, I would recommend, and if I ever have the time, I would look forward to actually reading this again and maybe reading some of the issues that came before and after it to get a little bit more context in the story. Because, like I say, I think the reveal, the ultimate, what the story was driving at, does justify a lot of what came before and made me go, okay, so maybe all that second guessing I was doing, all that not quite trusting what I was reading on the page, some of that was beneficial at the time, but some of it I was second guessing too much. So like I was just assuming that maybe all of the flashbacks weren't true, because there's Howard Stark running around Las Vegas doing heists of casinos that are run by grey aliens and trying to save a robot and injecting his child and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, some stuff I was right to second guess, but other stuff I wasn't. But yeah, generally a thumbs up on Iron Man Secret Origin of Tony Stark. We'll move on now to James's recommendation, which is Secret Avengers issues 1-5. This is from Ed Brubaker and Mike Diodato, again available on Marvel Unlimited. So as James mentioned on the podcast last week, this is kind of like a 4-issue story that has kind of like a 5th-issue topper on it. Basically, there's a 5th-issue that Nick Fury is involved in this story in some capacity, except during the 4-issue arc of the main story, it's not actually revealed why he is. Why it's Nick Fury, or why it's important that it's Nick Fury. And the next issue is able to do that. The final issue, the 5th issue, is able to just kind of stop and pause and tell a 1-issue Nick Fury story and explain who that guy is. And I would assume set up future stories. So the Secret Avengers, this is the first issue kind of shows us Steve Rogers going around and kind of putting together this team of Secret Avengers. So he's not the main Captain America anymore, and he's not an Avenger. So he's kind of putting together this covert team. So we start off in a scene where Black Widow and Valkyrie Valkyrie, who I believe is a Thor character who is rumoured to be appearing in the next Thor movie. Those two are kind of working undercover as escorts, seducing a Roxxon employee who has got an item that the Secret Avengers want to recover. So we meet those two, and then we meet Captain America. He then goes back to his base, and we see that he's working with Beast from the X-Men. There's also Sharon Carter, S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent 13. There is an Ant-Man, not Scott Lang or Hank Pym. I believe this guy's called Eric, but I'm not sure on his full name. There is Moon Knight, who looks like a kind of angsty Marvel Batman kind of character who I've never encountered before. And I'm trying to think, there's War Machine. War Machine, that is Rhodey. War Machine, and I think that's it. Oh, and then there is Nova, who's never actually with the team because he is kind of intergalactic based. But Nova is sent on a mission on Mars by the team and becomes compromised, and that's what sets up the next three issues. So the first issue basically takes part on Earth. The item they recover is this serpent crown. This crown that kind of moves while they're not looking and is kind of like, looks like it's made of like metallic snakes. And there is another one that Nova finds on Mars, except when he puts that serpent crown on, he kind of gets taken over and controlled. And the rest of the Avengers, the rest of the Secret Avengers, have to go up to Mars to kind of find out. They all they know is that he's missing. So they go up to kind of save him, and then realize when he's there that he has been compromised and is being used as a tool to do something nefarious on Mars. And so it was kind of a strange comic. The first issue is kind of setting up this like covert operations, kind of like spy kind of story. Like it has James Bond vibes. In fact, it reminded me in the first couple of pages of Velvet, in that you've got Black Widow and Valkyrie kind of dressed sexily to seduce this idiotic oil executive and steal something from him. I did kind of have a problem with the art in this on a couple of occasions, and not the like the art style, but I generally don't like it in superhero comics when the male characters are drawn with ridiculous muscles, like muscles in places that you couldn't imagine. And for some characters that works, for other characters it works less. But there was literally a moment in the fourth issue of this where Captain America is drawn with pecs so enormous that it actually looks like he's got like double D boobs. It's absurd. And that then extends to the female characters, where when we first see Valkyrie and Black Widow, the two female versions of the team posing as escorts, which probably isn't the best way to introduce two female characters in your comic, but they are posing as escorts and wearing very slinky dresses to the point that when the two characters are shown in silhouette, the silhouette actually takes time to have a little bump where Valkyrie's nipple is to make clear that that's there. And there is lots of moments with the female characters with their backs to the camera and or backs facing, with lots of bum shots. I just generally didn't like the way that bodies were drawn, both male and female, but I thought the female ones were slightly more questionable. I really like comics like Hawkeye, where I didn't think at any moment in Hawkeye that either character was like that Clint Barton was drawn with rippling muscles and tight suits, or Kate Bishop was drawn in any kind of sleazy way. Whereas this, I think, is kind of the cliche of what people would imagine comics are like. I'm looking at a picture of Nova here where, honestly, I couldn't count how many abs he is supposed to have. It's just flat out absurd. But so that was just something that slightly bothered me. And then talking about the last comic being hard sci-fi, this is the same. There is some monster living underneath Mars who is controlling Nova through the serpent mask, who wants to be let out from underneath Mars and is using Nova to do so. So the other Secret Avengers have to go up there and stop Nova. There is also a thing going on with a secret portal that Ant-Man travels through that takes him between Earth and Mars. And basically, it's lots of just big fighting happening up on the Red Planet. And I've generally struggled with team books since I started reading comics in general. I've read Avengers comics that James recommended in the past that I couldn't hugely click with. And I've read a couple of the all-new Marvel titles that are team books. And I've not been able to get on with them on any occasion to the extent that I have on solo character books. And I wonder whether that's maybe a product of me not having read as many comics in general, that maybe I don't know these characters as well as other comics readers would going into team stories. But I kind of feel like I just have like a very surface level knowledge of who these characters are. But I never really feel that in any team book more than one or two of the characters have felt properly fleshed out to me. Like in this book, Nova could be anyone because he's been taken over by some evil force, so it doesn't really matter that it's Nova. It felt kind of important that it was Steve Rogers as the main guy in the team, and I thought maybe Valkyrie felt at least individual in that she was from Asgard and so stood out from the rest of the team, but I didn't feel like there was any moment in this comic where Moon Knight or War Machine or Black Widow had any kind of moment where I was like, oh, that is why that character specifically is here, or that is a moment where I've got to know that character better than I did at the start of the story. I would say the same for Beast as well. It was almost like they're just characters who are there because they're already characters in Marvel, and would they work in the story? Like, I understood that why that was the team that Steve Rogers had assembled, that they all had kind of attributes that would work well in a covert operations team, like Ant-Man can be small, and Moon Knight seems to be a kind of like living in the shadows, stealthy character, and Black Widow is obvious. So yeah, I kind of understood that, but just this felt like a vehicle for a plot rather than a vehicle for telling interesting stories about characters whilst going through that plot. It just felt like plot to me. And that plot was fine, but not too exciting. Now, it was interesting to see some of these new characters that I hadn't seen before on the page, and some even on the screen. Like I said, I vaguely, barely know who Moon Knight is, so that was at least interesting to see him pop up. I also enjoyed characters staying in their masks whilst wearing helmets on Mars too. I didn't not enjoy this, but it didn't really do anything particularly for me, and it hasn't won me round on the concept of team books. I mean, I've even struggled with Guardians of the Galaxy comics when they're a team together, just because I was just like, well, there's not... I mean, I like these characters individually, but they're doing nothing for me as a team because there's not enough moments for each of them. And maybe in long-running series there is, and maybe you can kind of flip focusing on certain characters in certain arcs, but it just doubled down on me appreciating the Avengers movie that was able to do this on the big screen. But yeah, I'm sure at some point I will get to some comics where I'm sure there will be some X-Men comics and stuff like that this concept really does work. And maybe have a longer format. I guess X-Men Season 1 was probably the one that I've enjoyed the most, where you could say that was a team book. But really, then, that had a protagonist and then had supporting characters around her. But yeah, so that was Secret Avengers issues 1-5. And that's going to be our last main comic book recommendation of this year, because that's it for this week, and after this week, we're going to be back with our award show, which is going to be looking back on the first year of Cinematic Universe. So we'll probably be looking back at some previous pitches, at some previous comics recommendations, and at all of the movies and TV shows that we've covered from this year, and handing out awards to the best and worst examples of them. And I think if you look back at the films we covered this year, there is definitely some best and worst to get into. I have to apologise to all listeners who were disappointed at the end of last week's show, thinking that we were actually going to be covering Jingle All The Way. We've had more tweets than I was expecting saying that they would actually like us to cover that movie on the show. We're not going to be doing that this year. I'm not going to rule it out in the future, but come on guys, that movie's terrible. It's really bad, really bad. I'll tell you what I'll do for you right now. is I'll give you one little taste of what would happen on a Jingle All The Way show. And that would be me repeatedly saying, put that cookie down now. So there you go. If you enjoy the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice. And if you've already subscribed, then please leave us a rating or review and we'll give you a shout out on a future show. You can find more episodes of Cinematic Universe on cinematicuniverse.libsyn.com or as we're a Film Divider podcast at filmdivider.com. You can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter at @CU_podcast or send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com. See you next week.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.